Welcome from the deep. I am Mike the Finder.
And I am Book of Brett.
And today we are going to be talking about the 2020 film Possessor.
Yeah, we're doing a movie review again.
This is also a movie that I've wanted to get you to watch for, I don't know, it feels like at least 3 or 4 months now.
It does. It has felt like when a girlfriend really wants some flowers.
I mean, this is like all cards on the table. This is like in my top four on my Letterboxd profile. And this is, you know, we watched, I think we reviewed Infinity Pool last year, at the beginning of last year, when we both saw it in theaters. And ever since then, I've wanted to get you to watch Possessor because you did not care for Infinity Pool all that much. And I loved it.
I didn't hate Infinity Pool.
Right. I mean, that's fair.
But yeah. No, I was not like a huge fan of Infinity Pool like you were. However, after having watched Possessor, I feel like I need to go give Infinity Pool another shot because I have a little bit more of an expectation of what I'm getting into with it.
Yeah.
Whereas with Possessor, I had a little bit more of an expectation of what I was getting into, not only based off of Infinity Pool, but also based off the description, which called it a sci-fi thriller.
That's one of the reasons I wanted you to watch it. Yeah.
Anytime you put sci-fi in the name, all cards are off the table and my mind is open to whatever comes at me. Ugh. because not out of like being some sci-fi fanboy, but because sci-fi could be fucking anything.
Yeah. Well, and that's like we said at the beginning of the year, we're going to try to branch into some different stuff. I think this movie specifically is
been us branching into sci-fi.
Well, I mean, we did Scanners last week, right? And I felt like Possessor bumped up ass to ass with Scanners. Is
next week Pride and Prejudice?
No, I think that Scanners and Possessor it would actually be a really cool double feature to watch these two together. Not only because David Cronenberg did Scanners and Brandon Cronenberg did Possessor, but they're also like kind of similar in the idea. So I feel like these back to back actually make for a really good discussion. And now that we've both seen
daddy
Scanners,
brother, right?
Daddy son.
They're daddy brother, right?
I don't know what that means. Yeah. Daddy brother?
Oh, they're daddy's son.
Yeah.
Okay.
Brandon is.
I feel like everything's creepier if you put the word daddy in there.
Oh, it's definitely creepier, which is why I don't understand why we're saying it so much.
Move on.
Okay. So anyway, this is my third time watching this movie. And this is your first, right? So
yep.
I think that going into this, you knew little to nothing about it. But I think that, like we said at the beginning of the year, this is a good bridge from horror to sci-fi. I think that this is on both of our levels, I think. So this is, I think, going to be kind of an interesting conversation. So do you want to go ahead and give us a synopsis of Possessor from 2020?
Yes, Possessor from 2020 is a sci-fi action thriller about a high-profile or a highly trained assassin that takes on the bodies of other people to achieve her goals and finally asks the question, what would a woman do if she had a penis?
Wow. All right. Yeah, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. Let's jump over to the podcast drive-in over here. Possessor from 2020.
By the way, none of that was wrong.
No, it was all correct.
There's a whole scene of her just.
Yep. And another scene where she's using it. Possessor from 2020 is rated R. It is an hour and 43 minutes. It's got a 6.5 out of 10 on IMDb. It was directed by Brandon Cronenberg. It stars Andrea Riseborough, Christopher Abbott, and Jennifer Jason Leigh. Now, Christopher Abbott, I want to talk about this for just a second, because the first time I watched this, I went through the entire movie thinking that he was Kit Harington. Okay, because here they are right next to each other and they look
similar. Yeah, they do.
I went through the first time I watched this the entire time thinking that was Kit Harington, and it's not. They're completely different people, and Kit Harington is British. But Kit Harington is British, I think, and Christopher Abbott is American. But they look,
I think he's Canadian, isn't he?
No, he's American, I think. I looked him up.
The American actor. The guy who plays her husband's Canadian. That's right.
Okay. But yeah, I don't know. I just thought this was weird because, like, he looks just like him. So I thought that was worth pointing out.
They're not related at all?
No, I looked it up. And that's actually how I got to this, is Christopher Abbott related to Kit Harington. And that is how I found this picture.
I never put those two together. And now... forever, the two shall be intertwined. Forever,
yes. And honestly, it's not, I don't know, it's not a bad person to be, like, to look like, I guess. But, no. But it is something that I felt like the Game of Thrones guy showing his dick in a movie, that's a weird
it's
choice.
Jarring. Like, it's jarring.
Yeah. Anyway, and Andrea Riseborough, who is just fucking awesome in Birdman. She's also Mandy in the movie Mandy, which is another one of my favorites from the last few years, especially.
Oh, she is.
Yeah, she's very good in that. She doesn't have a whole lot of dialogue in that movie, but she's very fucking good in that movie. And then Jennifer Jason Leigh, who is another amazing actress, and she's in The Hateful Eight. I don't know if you've seen The Hateful Eight.
I haven't. I keep getting around. She's so good in that. It's just so fucking long. Yeah, dude.
When I watched it for the first time, it was on Netflix, and they broke it up into like multiple episodes. So it was like the director's cut, and it was like 4 fucking hours long. But it felt more digestible because
what
I watched
is he, Peter Jackson.
But I watched it in a more episodic way, and it just felt more digestible in that way. So, but yeah, Jennifer Jason Leigh, she's been on a ton of stuff. If we go down to the beginning of her career,
she plays the girlfriend.
No, she's the boss. A Single White Female is another one of her big movies. She's been, you know, she's been acting since like the mid-70s.
Single Female Lawyer.
Yeah, 1976. She was probably very young back then. But yeah, so this has a lot of really good people in it. And then the one sentence synopsis from IMDb says, an agent works for a secret organization that uses brain implant technology to inhabit other people's bodies, ultimately driving them to commit assassinations for high paying clients. I think that this is
driving them.
I mean, if you think about it, like they're a car. Then,
I mean. Yeah, well, yeah. Okay.
Like, okay. They're quite literally driving them.
Fair enough.
But I think that this is a kick-ass idea.
It's not often you hear that term used so literally in the context of, you know, humans.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think that this is one of the better ideas for a horror movie in a very long time. And it's like I touched on, this is very similar to Scanners in that way, except that they need, you know, they need some appliances to make all of this work. And whereas Scanners is just like a passive ability that they have. But they're very similar. And I think that Brandon Cronenberg is really... Dude, he's just got such cool ideas, and he's going off of David Cronenberg's whole vibe with the whole body horror type stuff. And I don't know, I think it's very cool.
Can we moving forward, anytime we refer to Brandon Cronenberg doing something that David Cronenberg does, only saying he's doing what Daddy did?
No.
Or
nope.
Can we just call David Cronenberg Daddy in reference to Brandon?
You can.
For the rest of the
Absolutely.
Episode.
And then I will do a supercut of you saying Daddy every time.
Daddy!
Yeah.
Daddy, Daddy, Daddy!
That's all getting cut. Okay, so if you want to, since this is the very first time you're seeing this, I'm really interested to hear what you have to say about this. What we will do is we will do our initial thoughts, and then we will move into spoilers and talk about the end and more specifics about this movie. And then at the very end of the show, we will give our final thoughts and our ratings on Possessor. So why don't you go ahead and give me your initial thoughts?
There is a lot to enjoy here. I wasn't sure going into it, given given my feelings with Infinity Pool and everything, but I kept an open mind going into this one. I've been trying to keep an open mind going into a lot of things lately, but I also went into this knowing that I didn't like Infinity Pool as much as you did, and after we discussed it, rethinking not liking Infinity Pool, so I tried to go into this with a bit more of an open mind. To try not let that get in the way. But with that said, this time I had an expectation of kind of what I was going to get out of it. And we definitely do get a lot of the vibe that we see of an Infinity Pool, i.e. we get a lot of Brandon Cronenberg in here. Yeah. His style is in here and it is not light. you see it plain as day, but it's done really, really well. And that's why I want to go back and watch Infinity Pool again, because now that I kind of have a feeling of what his style is like, going into this with that pretext allowed me to enjoy it and allowed his style, both in directing and editing. I know he didn't edit it, but you know, he had a lot of influence on the editing. Seeing his style as part of the film, rather than it standing out so much it was distracting, added so much to the movie.
Well, you had kind of said that you thought Infinity Pool was kind of pretentious, if I remember correctly.
Infinity, yeah, it was. It was incredibly pretentious. So I'm curious,
yeah, how you feel about it in that way, because this, you're right, this has his style all over it, but it's not nearly as, I guess, heavy-handed is a good word for it. It's a little more subdued with his style, but it's still in that same style. Yeah.
I got an artsy Kubrick vibe off of this. Like, I could not help but get Clockwork Orange vibes from a lot of scenes in this movie.
Yeah.
Not like spot on, or not like, you know, like direct ripoffs. We're definitely not dealing with the same subject material, but there's a vibe. It's that dystopian, dark, gritty vibe of nobody's happy. Nobody really has a reason to be happy, and a lot of dark shit's going on. And so you do, but again, the way that it's done is very, there are some Clockwork Orange vibes in here. There's one scene where it's a wide shot of a white van against a brick wall. Yeah. And that was the first time I went, that feels like a Clockwork Orange. But again, like I said, everything in this movie is complementing the story going on and the scenes happening on screen. The camera movement. What is that movie we watched recently where, like, the camera movements were so jarring and so in your face? What was that?
Oh, that was that new Sandra Bullock movie, Into the World, or yeah. What was the name of that fucking thing?
It's that
Netflix movie
with her and I can't remember dude's name now. Ethan Hawke.
Yes.
That was a prime example of just sitting here going like, dude, get a fucking tripod. Like, I don't know if you ran out of a tripod. I don't know if the tripod budget ran out or what happened, but that is exactly how you don't do camera movement. Let me rephrase that. Not that you don't do it that way. It's how you do it ad nauseum. This is camera movement. This is lighting. This is editing. This is everything being put onto the screen to complement the scene and to drive the story forward in its own, in its own regard. And overall, I mean, like, dude, this does have a sci-fi vibe, but this is not this is not like high fantasy sci-fi. No. This is not space sci-fi. This is sci-fi, like, set in a grounded reality, but outside of our reality. And I really, really enjoyed this movie. And there's a lot to enjoy, not just from the cinematography, the lighting, the editing. It's, I even have in my notes, it's not very often that we get editing that really feels like the scene would not have worked the same way without
it. For sure. It's so important in this movie.
It's so important. Yeah. It's so fucking good.
Yeah.
And the other thing I love about it is I'm pretty sure the only CGI we really get in here, or the hardcore CGI that we get in here, is the little thing that looks like a spider egg sack that I think is signifying her like breaking from.
Yeah.
From the subject.
Well, I think
or more intertwining with the subject, I guess.
I think the other scene is the candle melting face looking thing.
No, that was practical.
All of it was practical. Are you sure?
That was practical, dude.
Did you look that up? Because I feel like I watched it this time thinking, oh, they definitely did some CGI there, but
I didn't look up that specific scene, but like what I did read that like all the hallucination scenes are all done in camera with editing.
There's so many cool cinematography things done in camera in this too.
Yeah.
Like it's not just the effects. It's all of it, dude. It's all of it. Sorry for cutting you off. Go ahead.
But dude, everything about this movie is just, it's highly enjoyable. It's not pretentious. It's high-minded in a non-pretentious way. And this movie doesn't work without the high-minded mentality behind everything that perspective is injected into.
Yeah.
It doesn't work the same without it.
I agree. I'm very glad you liked it, because going into this for the third time for me, it felt a little like, I don't know how I'm going to feel about this time. 'Cause the first time I watched it, I loved it. The second time I watched it, I loved it. And now with having seen Infinity Pool, I also went back recently and watched his first movie, Antiviral, which I don't think you've seen either. That movie is about celebrities selling their diseases and their sicknesses to other people.
No, I know that movie. I have not seen it, but I know what you're talking about.
You haven't seen it? Okay. That's his first movie. And that is yet another movie where it is like grounded sci-fi, where it's honestly, it feels kind of near future and super grounded, but there's, you know, it's very reality based, but then there's this weird thing in this reality that can happen, such as possessing people or Infinity Pool's case, you know, I won't spoil that movie if you haven't seen it, but you know, there's things in Infinity Pool in that same way. And Antiviral is the same way. It feels very near future, but they sell celebrities' diseases to normal people. So for me, seeing this for a third time, honestly, I loved it yet again. And I feel like I caught a bunch of stuff that I had not caught before. But the thing that I was able to really grasp onto this time is how well this film is made. And you can tell upon another rewatch, this felt a little more low budget than it did the first time I saw it. And, you know, I caught little things here and there where I was like, oh, I probably would have reshot that, such as them putting the needle in and it kind of catches the little plastic thing. Like, why do you have all these laser guided things on the needle if it's going to still catch the plastic thing on the way in? There's a couple things here and there that I felt like you probably should have redone that. But overall, this is a really, really fucking well made movie. The cinematography is awesome. The lighting is
amazing.
Awesome. The editing, like you said, is phenomenal.
It's a little underexposed at times. There are a few scenes where it's a little underexposed. That's a super nitpicky thing, and that's more about just like noting it rather than going like, I would have done that better. No. This is one of those movies where you watch it and you go, I would have been on set taking notes.
Yeah. Well, like, and that's like the thing, man, is like this really drives home the fact that he is not just a fucking Nepo baby. Like he is a legit ass. I don't want to use the word genius, but like, he is a legit ass writer, director in his own right. And I feel like if he didn't have his dad's name behind him, it would probably take him 5 to 6 more movies to get to where he's at now. But at the same time,
because he's been growing up with his dad, that's like a lifetime of film school. There is a bit of nepotism to it. You can't disregard the nepotism aspect. However, you also, acknowledging the nepotism aspect is not taking away from what he's accomplished.
Right.
It's kind of like when we talk about like rich kids. It's like, I'm not gonna shit on somebody who's a rich kid just because they were born into a rich family. They didn't choose that.
Right.
And you know what? If I could go back and choose, can I be born to my parents that are gonna be my parents? Or can I be born to David Cronenberg? I'll take Cronenberg, well, please.
I think
one Cronenberg, please.
When we go back to our conversation about Infinity Pool, which I will link down below, because if you're interested in this movie, you're probably interested in Infinity Pool. That's kind of what we landed on Infinity Pool being about. And so him being aware of his nepotism and sort of being hyper aware of how it affected his life and Infinity Pool gives that feeling about how he almost feels guilty about it. And it's him like internalizing the nepotism thing. When you look at this just as like a regular film, if I didn't know who the fuck he was, I feel like I could watch this movie and feel like whoever fucking made it is at a really high level of filmmaking and writing, because this is it's just got like experience. I am an experienced filmmaker written all over it, and it is his second fucking movie.
Yeah. I feel like what happens a lot with these call them nepo babies, it's got a really negative connotation, but from a literal standpoint, nepo babies, I feel like what happens a lot of times is people end up shitting on them for one of two reasons. A, they got where they're at because of their family connections, and they're not living up to what they should be, given every opportunity they've been given throughout their lives up to the point where we finally see them. Or B, jealousy that they were given these opportunities, they lived up to that expectation, and all you can do is sit back and go, fuck, they did a good job, god damn it.
It's also hard to hate on somebody when they're hyper aware of who they are and
that's what I was saying is, you know, it's calling him a nepo baby sounds really negative
and
because
harsh,
99 know? And harsh, because 99% of the time it is a negative term. In this case, though, he has taken his upbringing, what he's learned by being brought up in the environment that he's been brought up in, and done his own thing with it. And I can't hate on him for that. I can't.
Well, especially,
I'd love to. I would love to be petty and vindictive and wallowing in my own sorrow and self-loathing and pity, but I can't do that here.
Well, and especially when he takes kind of the genre and vibe that his dad had and makes it his own. Like, if he was just straight doing body horror and shit, I'd be like, okay, that seems like an easy layup. Like, what are you doing? But what he's done is he's figured out this like body horror / sci-fi horror mix. And Infinity Pool has this too, where it feels like it's his own thing. And you don't see other movies trying to do this same sci-fi horror thing.
It's also not as heavy-handed with the body horror as his dad's is.
Yeah.
But when we get the body horror, holy shit, do we get body horror.
I mean, this movie
is...
We're
going to talk about that, but all I'm going to say is, poor Sean Bean.
Well, you know the moment.
I'm pretty sure. Now you can say it because this is just, it's a running joke at this point.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure every single contract that Sean Bean has requires him to die.
Yeah.
I think it's just written in there, and I don't know why.
I think he probably just likes playing death scenes. I think it's
one of two things. He either hates deaths, or he either loves playing death scenes, or he hates doing sequels. And so he just ensures that he doesn't have to come back.
Well, and that's the other thing. We touched on it a little bit. But honestly, dude, this movie is gory as fuck too. Like the thing about it is, you know, the special effects are all great, but it is fucking bloody and gory and violent and angry, and none of it feels like it's too much. It feels like it's there for a reason and to serve the purpose of the plot. Whereas like in most horror and sci-fi horror in general, it's disgusting to be disgusting. And in this, it feels like he's using it in the right, in the correct way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, 100%.
So, okay, well, I'm really glad you like this. So let's get into some specifics. I think from here on out, we will talk about spoilers and talk about some of these scenes a little more in depth. So if you haven't seen this movie, would you suggest seeing this?
100%. I mean, if you don't go watch it, people like different aspects of movies. So one thing we have not touched on is if you go to see a movie and you're not going for the cinematography, if you're not going for the editing, the directing, if you are going to see a movie for the acting is one thing that we did not touch on.
Yeah,
and that's a good point. Alice Riseborough? Is that her name?
Andrea Riseborough.
Andrea Riseborough. If you like to go watch movies and your main thing is the acting, obviously acting is a big part of it. So I'm not saying that nobody's going to see it for the acting, but if your main thing is to go see it for the acting, go watch this for her, just simply for her ability to emote.
Yeah.
Like the tortured look on her face at all times, the look of impact that everything has on her, this woman's ability to emote and act without any verbalization whatsoever blew me away. It really blew me away. And there's so many times where we're talking about the acting, the character development, stuff like that, but we don't often find ourselves talking about characters for their simple ability to communicate non-verbally.
Yeah.
And God damn, dude.
That's why she's so good in Mandy, is because she does the same thing in that movie. She has, I don't know, like less than a paragraph of lines in that movie, I think. And she does the exact same thing. It's her eyes. It's her face. Like just her face in general is so expressive. And her ability to, like you said, communicate non-verbally it's seriously incredible. It is seriously incredible. And then you put on top of that, I want to say Kit Harington, but it's not. It's Christopher Abbott. You put on top of that, Christopher Abbott does a hell of a job in this movie too. I think that his performance, it's easier to look past his performance because he doesn't come around until the later half of the movie. But when you start really paying attention to his fucking ability to emote as well, but also do it in a way that's verbal, it's fucking incredible. You're right. We should have touched on that more. The acting is amazing.
Well, and not only that, but his ability to act as a character being done by another person and then switching back and forth between that original character and the character like that a bit. I'm watching him going like, my brain doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like me watching somebody do math really well and going like, I believe you. I believe what you're doing is correct. I don't know how you're doing it.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get into some specifics then, because like I said, we're going to be doing spoilers from here on out. The first fucking scene in this movie, we'll just start there because it is so fucking impactful, and it sets a tone. It sets the violent, bloody tone for the rest of this movie. And I'm just curious where your head is at whenever you're watching this for the first time, because it is just right off the bat, right out there. What, you know what? Something you said to me one time, I don't remember what movie we were talking about, but something you said to me was, it was about Alien. When I rewatched Alien and I said I fell asleep, and you took that as it's a boring movie instead of me just being tired of falling asleep during the movie. Mm-hmm. What you said to me was, God, if something isn't bloody and someone massacred within the first 10 minutes of the movie, you're just not interested in it at all.
And that reminded me how much you liked this movie.
That came into my head whenever I was rewatching it, because the first fucking scene is just bang, 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 like violence, violence, violence. So I'm curious where your head was at when you were watching this.
The first minute and a half of this movie gives me what I can only describe as the movie version of what we metalheads call stank face. That's what the opening scene, because it made me go, oh, but in like a yeah kind of way. And I it was, and
did it's it worry so, you seeing that like right off the bat, like how violent this movie was going to be? Was this
no,
like,
because
oh,
it's
of course
simple.
Mike chose this movie.
Because it's simple. Because honestly, think about this scene. Think about the close-up of her putting what we find out as the calibrator
right.
in her head.
Yeah. That's the first thing we see. Literally
the
first thing.
Zooming out. Think about zooming out from that. Doesn't have the same effect. But you come in close on that and it's, oh.
Yeah.
It's very uncomfortable.
Yes. They show the blood oozing out and they really... Yeah, it's very, very graphic. Like the very first
really,
thing we see.
I was very, very confused about what was going on through the entire thing up to the opening sequence or up to the title card, simply because it's just this range of emotions that you go through in the opening, you know, in the first like 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's disgust and horror at the close up of her putting that in her head. It's confusing, almost like empathy and sadness when you see her because you don't know why she's acting the way that she is. We transition to tension as they're going up the stairs. There's anxiety as she's looking at the knives. And then we get to, oh, shit, whenever Fat Man dies.
Because she just walks up to him. She doesn't say anything and just puts it in his neck. Yeah.
There have been no words. No, she doesn't put it in his neck. She puts it in his neck, then his side boob, then his tummy, and then his side boob again, and then his tummy 50 more times. Yeah. And it's just, even then, you're not sure what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
And then once we kind of transition out, you have this idea, but at this point in the movie, I started going, oh no, somebody watched Inception too many times. And I started getting really concerned when that happened. But again, like I said,
I had to put those two together. That's, yeah, I could see that.
I've been going into these a lot more open-minded. And so when I had that thought, I went, no, quit being an asshole and see where he's going with this first. Because I didn't want to be one of these people that's like, you know, you go watch Marvel movies your whole life, then you go watch a movie that actually is worth seeing and go, this is boring. It's been 45 seconds. Hold the fuck on for a minute.
Well, the thing I think I love the most about this movie is her sort of internal struggle to want to be a mother to her child, but also being an assassin and her being torn between these two different worlds, and her bosses want to tear her away from the family side of things. Her story arc is really fucking interesting, and it's not a happy-go-lucky sort of a thing in the way that, you know, most movies are, where you have this really happy ending and all of this shit. This is really the story about somebody letting go of their family and becoming an ice-cold killer. And I think that that is why this movie works so well. You can have all the trippy visuals and all the high-minded ideas that you want, but without her going through that arc, this is just a hyper-violent assassin movie. And like I said, we're doing spoilers here, so I'm not even going to sugarcoat this shit. The very first time she comes out after that first scene, that she comes out of possessing someone, they go through this interview process. And the interview process is to make sure that she's still all there. And she has all the same emotions that she had before possessing this person, right? And she holds up this butterfly. And this is the very last fucking scene of this movie, is her going through the exact same process. And what she says at the front, the first half or the first interview, is that she feels super bad about killing this butterfly and that she still feels bad about it that she did it as a kid. And then the very fucking last scene is her saying, I killed this butterfly as a kid, and then not saying that she feels bad about it at all, and her boss saying good, sort of signifying that she's become this fucking assassin that she's been trying to turn her into.
Good, my toad.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's my favorite thing about this movie, is her story arc of letting all of that go, because when she does kill the kid, that is such she has full control over that body at that point. That is not him doing that. That is her making the choice to assassinate her kid. And what I find really interesting about this is that at the beginning, like the white van scene that you were talking about, We find out in order to be possessed, you have to be drugged, knocked out. They put a thing into your brain. So what that tells us is that kid at some point had this thing put into his brain so that at some point he could be possessed. And I find that really fucking intriguing. When did they do that? Why did they do that? Was that in the anticipation of having to possess him at some point? Why? Like, and that's what's so fucking interesting to me. It leaves it open and we don't ever get those answers.
I think it actually goes a little bit deeper than that. At least let me rephrase that. For me, it went deeper than that, than just about her going through this transition, trying to, you know, battle this, having this internal battle. I actually kind of extrapolated that out to people in general, or at least people in situations that they want to change, that they're not happy with, that they're trying to get out of, and what happens when they're finally pushed to the breaking point. Because there's even a point where they talk about how the things he did to Mr. Parson and his girlfriend was actually him, and how he was in control of that, and right. How she had actually lost control at one point. And so I think there's a lot to be said about the breaking point of humanity in this movie, and that's why I made Brittany watch it, to show her what she does, what's going to happen if she doesn't stop pushing my fucking buttons.
I feel like I should call the police.
No, don't do that. Continue. We have an episode to do. Shut up, bitch!
See, no one knows you're joking, so it's like... No, but I like that idea. I like the idea of what you're saying is reading it in a more abstract, general sense.
Right.
Because, no, that's true as well. And I... On something you said where he was the one killing these people, I don't think that's true. I think that she is the one that has committed all of these murders, and he is being forced to watch it. And then after all of this stuff happens, which is the scene where he fucking starts choking her on the bed, that is the scene where he...
Hot.
Okay, I mean, that's a whole different level of conversation. But that's the moment when he, and it's even on the poster, when he pulls the fucking, her skin over his face, that's the moment where everything changes and he takes over and basically gets all of her memories and figures out where she lives and all this other stuff. So
it kind of reminded me of the Haunted Mask episode of Goosebumps. A little bit.
It's a weird parallel to draw. I don't know. I just think that, like, I like what you're saying, but I also think that it's a very, it's a really deep fucking thing to even talk about. This deep, almost sadness, but also jaded, like, anger and angst that somebody can have from a family and wanting to get the fuck away from that and almost resenting them for getting in the way of the thing that you're trying to do professionally. I think that that's such a fucking interesting thing to talk about. And I hadn't thought about it on that deeper level, but you're right. I mean, that's what this is about. That's fucking great. I like
every
it.
Spouse is an anchor. That's what we take away from this movie.
Wow.
And by anchor, I mean, on a sinking ship.
I need to make sure to send that to Brittany. All right.
These are all, and for anyone that's going to get pissed off, these are all jokes we make to each other. So there's nothing you can really say about it.
They're just jokes, people. Fucking relax.
She off camera, she's as bad to me as I am to her. So let's all just chill the fuck out. There's a reason she married me.
All right. Well, is there anything specific you want to go into about this?
This movie kept me guessing the entire time. I had at times I knew where this was going. at times, you know, you're kind of given the layout of what the plan is for a lot of shit, and it starts going down that road. But then at every single turn, it either keeps you guessing or it goes above what the expectation was. Like when he goes into the house to kill Mr. Parson, I think it's Parson or Parsons and his girlfriend. He goes in with a gun and then he picks up the fireplace poker. And I'm sitting here going, well, what you gonna do with that, buddy? Like, you already got the gun. What do you need the poker for, you sadistic little fuck? And then he goes in. And again, I'm going to say it. Poor Sean Bean. Like, it's just like you stabbed him and you beat him and you didn't even, and then you didn't poke his eye out. You're just, just a little bit, just so it popped out Igor style for a little bit, but it still stayed intact. And then you left him alive. And then just for shits and giggles, I guess, you can opener a couple of his teeth. I don't know why you did that, but there are just so many things here where it's taking you on a ride where you're constantly at least guessing or intrigued on where it's going to go, or it goes way over the top on what you think it's going to do.
Well, I think what's interesting is whenever she kills that guy at the very beginning, when she comes back, her boss asks her, why did you stab him? You had a gun. And if you know anything about serial killers and crime and stuff like that, stabbing someone is thought to be a little bit more personal and a little bit, and something that when murderers and killers do that, it's generally because they have a closer relationship to somebody, and a gun is thought to have been a little more, you know, you can step away mentally from it a little bit more and shit. So I think it's really interesting to say that she stabbed them, because this is also, what am I trying to say here? Because it's also one of those things that's like, when she does have the option to just shoot someone, she chooses to stab them both times. And I really fucking, for some reason, I find that just wildly interesting why she chooses to do that and why it's more personal. Because when the boss asks her, why did you do that? She said, I felt like that was more in line with her personality, the personality. And she says, whose? And so I just think it's, What it's showing us is she's going more and more and deeper into becoming this almost emotionless killer. And it's so fucking interesting. Also, this is also showing us how far corporations are willing to go to take stuff and to be in power, because the very first fucking thing that she tells him about the Sean Bean killing is that we need to own his fucking company. And what's interesting about that is his company goes and watches people in their home, unbeknownst to them, taking stock of what's in their house, lamps, sofas, curtains, all of this stuff, so that they can use that information in whatever nefarious ways that they want to. And corporate, as the boss calls them, we don't know who corporate is, but corporate wants to take over this fucking business by allowing his stepson to take control over this. And then they now have the blackmail material to have control over him. So I think that's a whole nother fucking level to this movie of how awful corporations are and how much power they want and what they're willing to do to get it. And I just think that's, again, it's just so fucking high-minded and smart to put it in terms of literal killing people. And if you know anything about, I don't know, Epstein and, like, you know, all of this horrible shit.
I think that's a perfect transition to talk about today's sponsor. Today's episode is sponsored by Amazon. Amazon, burning the world down one tree at a time.
I don't know, dude. It's just a whole nother level to this movie of, like, Other than the family shit that you're talking about, it's also just a huge theme in all of his fucking movies. All of his movies are like this, where he's got this really nihilistic, angry view of the world almost, but he's able to write it in such a way that is so subtle and meaningful, and that you also have to actually sit down and think about, that it just comes across as like a dude, this is a guy that he despite how good of a filmmaker he is, he's such a good fucking writer and putting themes into his movies. I really feel like we need to watch Infinity Pool again to really get the full fucking, because I've only seen it that one time as well. I've been tempted to rewatch that movie multiple times, but I just haven't. But I feel like after watching this, we both need to go rewatch Infinity Pool. And it might actually be interesting to have another conversation about that because of how deep and angry that movie is as well.
Yeah,
just rambling nonsense. But I would not be
opposed to that, because like I said, going into it having an idea of what the style is, going into it with, you know, having a better understanding of his style in general, I think would actually help that a lot.
Yeah.
Because like I said, Infinity Pool did have a lot of pomposity to it. But I feel like maybe that was on purpose.
Right.
And not as a means of going, I'm a Cronenberg.
Right. Right. Well, and if we look back at that conversation we had, we the whole point of that conversation was that movie is almost autobiographical, and how much he's toying with the idea of hating being in that position.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Boom. Well, a couple other things I have written down here, the abstract themes and scenes in this are very similar to Infinity Pool, talking about Infinity Pool, but I almost feel like they're better done in this because it's not so on the fucking nose. I don't know. Did you get that? Do you feel like the abstract, like, flashes and shit like that were better done in this than they were in Infinity Pool, or no?
Yeah, I feel like they played more of a purpose.
Right. It felt less like I feel like I need to put this in there, and more of like, I think that this was part of the plot.
Yeah, I think especially now that you're saying that, I think that was probably part of why I felt like Infinity Pool was a little bit more pretentious, because it's kind of like that movie, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Midnight, or whatever it was.
A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. Yeah.
Yeah, where you've just randomly got a clown and a fucking balloon in black and white, and it's just like, come on, dude. Like, this is every French film student's thesis film.
Oddly enough, also in my top four on Letterboxd.
There's no excuses for you anymore. But no, it's definitely in Infinity Pool, it felt a little bit more like, I'm using this to use it. And yes. In this, it felt like I'm using this to prove a point.
Right.
I'm using this to assist in the story.
Well, yeah, because they use it to, like, especially it's the skin scene where
it's so
clear what he's trying to say, but he's doing it in such an abstract way that it doesn't feel like the abstract parts of it are getting in the way of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I wanted to touch on, the fucking reflections in the eyes. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And it's only done when he is in control, I think. And so that's yet another thing that I wanted to touch on. Let me see. Anything else? The fucking, you know, I generally have a kind of a problem with Dutch angles and lining people up in ways that are not quote unquote,
it's pronounced Dutch angle,
that are not quote unquote correct. And he does that throughout this entire movie. If you know anything about cinematography, the way you're supposed to line up a shot when someone is talking to someone else is you're supposed to give them space in the direction that they're looking. And he does the exact fucking opposite of that in the entire goddamn movie. Every single scene that she's in talking to someone, he gives her negative space in the opposite direction of the person she's looking at. And it's so uncomfortable, but it's done with such purpose that it really feels like, dude, this guy really fucking knows what he's doing. And it's just all over the place.
It's a prime example of knowing the rules so you can break
exactly.
them.
Exactly. And the other part is, generally speaking, I have a hard time watching shaky handheld stuff. But in this, it feels, again, like he's done it with a fucking purpose. He's also got that goddamn aperture wide fucking open throughout most of this movie. And some of it is underexposed, but it also feels like he's doing it to give it that very dreamlike state and to give it this very disconnected from reality type of feeling that it doesn't, again, doesn't get in the way for me.
Nothing in this movie feels like it's done on accident.
No, it's all done with such purpose and
intention
to serve the fucking plot, dude. And that is why it's done well. If it was just done that way, just to do it, it wouldn't make any fucking sense. And we'd be complaining about why has he got everything wide open? Sure, it's dark and that's how you film stuff, but light it. But the lighting is done with such purpose. The aperture being open is done with such purpose. The Dutch angles and all the other stuff is done to make you feel uncomfortable with the shit that is happening. And it makes it come across as like, again, I don't want to say the word genius because I don't feel like he's quite there yet. But it's just, it's so masterful.
It's pretty.
It's fucking close, right?
It's real. It's fucking close. This one definitely tickled my pants fancy.
I'm so glad you liked this more than Infinity Pool, because I think this is.
Oh, yeah.
On rewatch, I may have said the exact fucking opposite when I was on a high from Infinity Pool. I can't remember. But on a rewatch,
I was literally high when I watched Infinity Pool.
Me too.
So,
but I just feel like on a rewatch, this is just a much better movie all around. It's just,
without a doubt.
Dude, it's so fucking good. I can't believe how good it is with multiple watchings.
There's also something very off-putting about Mia Goth in Infinity Pool.
Her performance is very over the top in that movie.
It's way too over the top.
Especially the closer you get to the end.
Yeah. and so that was a big part of it for me.
Yeah.
This one felt a lot more grounded. It's got a futuristic dystopian sci-fi vibe to it, even though it takes place in like 2008. So it takes place in the past, but it's got futuristic aspects to it. Everything about it felt like, again, dude, there's like this like Clockwork Orange-esque vibe to it.
Well, it feels like he's created his own universe almost. Mm-hmm. Like, because I can definitely see this taking place in the same universe that Infinity Pool takes place in. And Antiviral, now that I'm thinking about it. Like, it just feels like he's got his own connected universe happening. And it is very Clockwork Orange-ish, but it's also very Cronenberg, like his dad. And it just... it's just like he took all of these pieces from different things and made his own thing with it. And that is what fucking amazing great artists do, is they take all their influences and mash them together to make their own thing. And that's what he's done here. And it's just great. It's fucking great.
Maybe they'll make a movie together under the name of Bronenbergs.
They're not brothers,
but you can be bros. Because it'll be two of them.
All right. Well, ignoring that comment, why don't you go ahead and give me your final thoughts and rating on Possessor from 2020?
My final thoughts are it is far superior to Infinity Pool, though I need to go back to watch Infinity Pool again to really make a fair comparison there.
Yeah.
I will admit that it's not fair to do that based off of my initial impression of Infinity Pool, but Possessor is more than I was expecting, far more than I was expecting.
Did you go into this with I didn't like Infinity Pool, so I'm not expecting too much? This?
In fact, I went into it purposefully not having that mentality.
All right.
Giving it a fair shot, being conscious of that I didn't like it, being conscious of the style. I was conscious of the style. I was expecting the style, but I was not expecting the same movie. So I went into this, like I said, I've been really trying to go into things with an open mind. And I did that. And this is a prime example of how that can pay off.
Well, I was a little worried because I did talk this movie up to you. Before we watched it.
Right. Right. And I still very often put very little weight on your opinions. So, I mean, you know, that also helped in enjoying this movie as well.
Wow.
And so, But no, in all seriousness, I think going into this with an open mind allowed me to be more receptive to all of the important elements that make this movie what it really is, and being able to acknowledge the fact that every element of every scene is what's making that scene better as a whole. And with that said, I am going to give Possessor an 8.5 out of 10.
God damn. Okay.
I loved it. You know what? I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. I couldn't find anything bad about this movie.
Yeah.
It's not perfect.
No.
It's not a perfect movie. And but it's, goddamn, dude, it's really good.
What?
It's really good. And again, this is the biggest thing I took out of it is this is the first time I have watched a movie by someone whose only other film I've seen I was not crazy about. And this is a prime example of going into a movie open-minded.
I mean, that's good, man.
It sounded like I had a lot more to say there. Well, no, I'm sorry about that.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I was a little worried I had talked this movie up a little bit too much for you. And, you know, that's because I fucking loved this movie the first few times I saw it.
It's really good.
And, you know, I think that this is a prime example of a movie that you probably like 4 or 5 years ago probably wouldn't have been that into. But you know so much more about not only cinematography and camera work and all that stuff, but like the language of film. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know film and you appreciate all of the technical side of things, you can't help but fucking like this movie. Like, it's just so well done. And what I will say is I rewatched Antiviral not that long ago, and it is astounding how much better he got from Antiviral to this, because Antiviral is good, but, you know, it's just like, it's a much more straightforward type of movie. The abstract stuff is still in there and stuff, but it's just, he really found his voice in this film. And I feel like, Go ahead.
Is it the same DP?
I'm not sure.
The DP's got a lot to do with why this movie turned out the way it did.
Yeah, that's probably true.
His name's like Hiram. I'd say it was like Hiram Kassain. Can you look that up real quick?
Yeah, yeah. Hang on. So his name is Kiram Hussein. He also did Infinity Pool. So let's see. Let's go down.
Duh.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to have to go. I think that's 2011. I think. Yeah, he 2012. He did Antiviral as well. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, he's clearly found his team, man.
Oh, he's the same guy that did Hobo with a Shotgun.
No, but really?
Yeah. Cinematographer.
Really?
Hobo with a Shotgun. Yeah.
They used a DP on Hobo with a Shotgun? I thought they just gave the PA a pay bump.
Yeah, I take it you didn't like Hobo with a Shotgun.
I didn't hate it. It was just like, I mean, the low budget feel of it was clearly on purpose. So it just, you know.
I've heard good things about Random Acts of Violence. I've never seen it, but I've heard good things about it.
Oh, no, they're great, dude. If you're having a bad day and you just go out and you just stab somebody, all your stress goes. All gone.
He's a cinematographer on the Firestarter remake. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I didn't.
Oh, it's, you know, not the original, but this is a Stephen King book.
I know that.
Okay. But yeah, anyway, for me, I fucking love this movie. This is the third time I've seen it. I think it gets stronger with a rewatch, which is not something you can say about everything. Most of the time, movies that I've seen once or twice, I have a very hard time giving my full fucking attention to. That is not the case in this movie at all. Even when you know what's coming, especially in that first scene, I think it adds tension knowing what's coming versus not knowing what's coming. It still has tension, but when you know what's about to happen, there's a whole different level of tension to it. I think that the cinematography is phenomenal. Like, it's some of the best shit out there for this abstract sci-fi horror, like art house avant-garde type shit. I think that the lighting is fucking phenomenal. The plot is so fucking interesting and smart and fun. The core idea is so fucking strong that I could watch. Dude, I could watch four other movies set in the same universe with the same core idea. Like, I really feel like you could go in a thousand different ways with this thing and do different assassins and like the whole fucking thing. It's just the idea is that fucking strong. So for me, I'm on the same level with you here, dude. This is also a 9 out of 10. This is not perfect. It's not. But it is so fucking close to perfect. If you appreciate horror, sci-fi, even practical effects, gore, cinematography, like all of the technical aspects, this thing kills. And it's just fucking great, dude. It's just great. It leaves it slightly up for interpretation on how you feel about it. We both clearly got slightly different things out of it, which is always a fucking the marker of a smart, good movie. And I don't know, dude, I'm so down for whatever Brandon Cronenberg does next. I'm very excited to see what he does after Infinity Pool. And I don't know. I just think that if you're into horror, go fucking see this. If you haven't seen it right now, as we record this, this is on Tubi. You are going to have to watch it in 720 and have it broken up by 5 minute fucking commercials every 10 minutes.
Go buy physical.
Yes, for sure. This is we both watched it on Tubi and we're constantly being interrupted by commercials, but it didn't hurt the movie, I don't think, for either of us. And it didn't get in the way at all. It's one of those movies I was willing to look past that it's on.
Well, there's nothing like a Cronenberg movie being interrupted by a Nasonex commercial. Yeah,
exactly. So it's just that strong. So if you haven't seen it, definitely go see it. If you like this, make sure you hit the like button. If you really liked it, make sure you hit the subscribe button. I did. I rated it. I told you I'm on the same level as you. 9 out of 10. I said that.
Oh, I missed that part. Oh. Okay. Yeah, then you can cut what I just said where I interrupted you out and go to the closing.
All right. Well, if you like this, make sure you hit that like button. If you really liked it, make sure you hit the subscribe button because we got a lot more content like this on the channel. We're trying to do more sci-fi/sci-fi horror stuff lately. And I think this was a perfect movie to go more in that direction. This is I just can't say enough fucking good things about this movie. So let us know how you felt about it down in the comments. And thank you guys for all of the support we've been getting lately. It's really fucking awesome to be seeing everybody liking what we're doing. We've got more trailer stuff coming up soon. There just hasn't been this week specifically, and last week there just hasn't been anything we've been super hyped on. We did miss the Beetlejuice and the, what was the other one we were gonna do?
Wouldn't say we missed them, but we did not do them. What was the other one? We were gonna do Beetlejuice 2. We were also gonna do I don't remember. Dude, my brain's so dead at this point. Okay,
anyway, we do plan on doing more trailer reactions if that's why you're here. That more of that is coming. It's just going to be something, you know, we're actually excited to watch the trailer for, whether we end up liking it or not. So we got more stuff coming. I think here in the very near future, we're going to do another drinking at the drive-in because that's something that we both thoroughly enjoy making.
Yeah, and if we keep getting you trolls in the comments section, we might have to do three of those in a row.
Yes,
I see you guys. You know the best part. I want everybody to know this. There are so many times where Mike wants me to ignore you, and I refuse to.
Yeah.
So I just
that right there. That sentence right there is how you get more trolls, not less of them.
You bring it, bitch.
Please don't. Please don't bring it.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for.
It's going to get meaner as the years go on. It's just going to get meaner and meaner. And eventually, you're going to have to shadow ban me from the channel.
I've grown so apathetic towards all of it that I just feel like ignoring it is the best fucking option. But you
not me.
Go a different route. All not right. Me. Well, thank you guys for watching. We will see you guys next time from the deep. Bye bye.
Ta ta.